Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Our parenting expert, Dr. David Coleman, is with me now. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Claire. How are you doing?
Very well, and good to have you with us. And people can still get in touch. You can WhatsApp us now on the RT Radio 1 number, which is 0870 32 32 32. Text 51551, or you can email if you prefer, todaycb@rte.ie. So let's get started, David. We've had two quite different messages about 11-year-old boys and sports. So let's start with them. We'll take them one at a time. So this first one is from a parent who says, our 11-year-old son gets very stressed before his school's weekly swimming session. He's asked not to go to swim class for the past 3 weeks. Now, the parent says he's somewhat chubby and is very self-conscious. He does play team sports. He likes them, but he likes treats. And unfortunately, treats are everywhere. We mention healthy choices. We try to help him as best we can. Do you have any advice? So this is affecting his day-to-day life now, David, because he does not want to go to that swim class.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like the it's all about his fears about his body image and how he feels about himself, and perhaps that sense that he's going to be compared to other lads in his class when he's changing, and it sounds like he feels very self-conscious. So I think the key is to acknowledge and empathize that that might feel difficult for him and that he might feel very self-conscious. And then I suppose it's about exploring with him whether or not he then feels that his health and his body shape is something that is a problem for him. And if it is it something that he wants to do something about? And so that then might lead the mum or the dad into a situation where they can start to talk with him about his eating habits and perhaps other elements of his exercise. And it might be that it's something that they want to go maybe meet with a dietitian to discuss as well. But I think the key thing is to get, I suppose, some understanding with their son whether self-consciousness about his body is an issue that he wants to do something about.
Okay, and this next one then about another 11-year-old. This boy loves soccer, but he has dyspraxia, so he's not the strongest. But this listener says he enjoys it so much, especially the social aspect. It's his only hobby outside of video games. He's the only one in the class on the lower team in the soccer club, but he's still happy to go along to training with the whole gang. Unfortunately, as they move to under 13s games, the club has decided to scrap the lower team. So he will now be the only one in his class who isn't going to training and to matches. And this parent simply wants to know, how can they support him through this disappointment?
Yeah, it's so hard. I mean, there is often a very distinct shift when kids get to that kind of under 12, under 13, and certainly by the time of under 14 age, when all of the clubs, all the different codes as well, will move to much more competitive games. And so what that then means typically for a lot of the kids who maybe felt that they were weaker or actually were weaker in terms of ability and so on, they do tend to get sidelined. And so that then obviously means that it's, you know, really hard for them to keep up their motivation to keep going. It is interesting that he still enjoys the soccer and still wants to play. I'd be really surprised if the club are telling all those kids who maybe were on that lower team that they're just not welcome to come to the club. I think he will have to make a decision for himself, I guess, about whether he wants to still play soccer, even though it's unlikely that he's going to make the team ever. But that wouldn't necessarily mean that he can't go to training. He would be just training with, if there's an A and a B, he'd probably be training with the B, you know, if they've gotten rid of a C team. So if though, however, he's of the view that, look, you know, if they get rid of my team, then I'm not going to play soccer, and he's going to be really disappointed if the club are saying that there is no facility for him now to play, that really, I suppose, is just about acknowledging the depth of the disappointment and probably linking that to his dyspraxia, because he's probably going to blame his dyspraxia. So for those who don't understand about dyspraxia, dyspraxia typically is affects motor coordination. That's its main kind of area that it kind of causes challenges for kids. And so it might be that his gross motor, so his ability to kick, to pass, all that kind of stuff is the bits that might be affected. And so he may well blame that for why he now can no longer play sports. And I suppose it's just about spending a lot of time talking with him about understanding that, understanding the disappointment, acknowledging it, and then seeing, you know, is it something that he wants to continue with anyway, even if he doesn't get picked for the team? Because as they started, I think they did mention that it's the social aspect that he really enjoys anyway.
Mm-hmm. Like many children who play sports, you know, they're not in it for the win. Some of them are, but some of them just love to hang out with their friends. So hopefully they can find a way for him to continue with that so that they don't have to support him through the disappointment. And let's hope that they can work something out. Now, this is an interesting one from a listener who says, my third child turned 2 in August and her behaviour has become increasingly difficult to handle. Mealtimes are a nightmare with the older 2 who are 4 and 5 years old. Oh my goodness, that's a busy household, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
They just stare on as the 2-year-old melts down completely, screams and shouts until she gets her way. You can't say stop, you can't say no to her, or she loses it. Her explosions are so frightening, she gets so worked up. She's always been very different to my older 2 in temperament. I know all children are different, but I'm wondering, is this just the terrible 2s or is there something more going on? Now, they give us some more information. They say there's a couple of other things they're concerned about: delayed crawling, walking, eating issues, food intolerances, etc. And I'm wondering, is it all linked to her being neurodiverse in some way? When is it too early to start looking into getting an assessment of need? How do I get this child ready for next month when I need to be away for 10 days? She already suffers with separation anxiety. So there's a lot going on in that house, David. What's your advice?
For sure. I would absolutely pursue an assessment with that little girl, because I do think that, there's enough different things that they have noticed that seem to, you know, make her very different to her 2 siblings. And of course, it's not that we're directly comparing siblings, but I think a parent who has experience of other kids of their own, who knows how their other kids have been and have behaved, and if nothing else has changed in the family circumstances, and you have a child who then is so different in terms of behavior, in terms of her delays kind of neurodevelopmentally perhaps, I would absolutely be pursuing an assessment. And it's never too early, so you go to your public health nurse might be a good route, because she's only 2, or you can certainly go to your GP and you look for that assessment of need through that avenue, and absolutely get her on the list as soon as you can.
Okay, and we know about the delays that follow on from that, both in getting the assessment and then in getting the supports that you need. But you've got to start somewhere is what you're saying, and you need to do it as soon as possible.
As soon as possible, because I think you've got plenty of really strong evidence there that there is something very different about this daughter compared to the other 2 daughters.
All right, a very different question now. This is about a teenage daughter who was diagnosed with celiac disease last year, which was initially a relief. So they cut gluten completely from her diet. It looked like things were settling, but over time, food issues and choices have started to become an issue. She fixates on particular dishes and eats them repeatedly. She started taking chocolate to her room. I've tried to stop that, says our listener. She always feels tired. I find it hard to get her to leave her room and go and meet friends. She's experienced weight gain, and that's hard to explain. It affects her confidence. How do I tell what's normal teenage food habit behaviour, or is this something perhaps linked to an autoimmune diagnosis?
Goodness me, there's so much going on. And actually, so many of the queries today, I think, you know, probably need other kinds of professional intervention. And this is another case where I would suggest maybe that the mom might want to bring her daughter to meet with the dietitian. I think it is good if they know that she has celiac disease. I'm not 100% familiar with all of the complexities of celiac disease, other than, like most people, know that you need to cut gluten out of your diet. But in terms of maybe any other complications that celiac in particular might bring up, I think if she were to go to a dietitian, because that also might be the route when it comes to just understanding about the weight gain, which seems unusual if actually her diet is predominantly healthier. Although then if she's eating a lot of chocolate, that might be something significant. But I do think that it would be helpful to get a dietitian's opinion and to see, is there any kind of specific support that they can get then, and, you know, for her her daughter as well, because it may be that her daughter needs a little bit of both reassurance and guidance from a professional so that she can actually change her habits in a more healthy way. It sounds like, you know, maybe the whole thing has come as a bit of a shock to her. And it sounds like maybe she's panicked a bit in terms of how she's responded to understanding that she has celiac disease. Mm-hmm. And she just might need a little bit of professional support beyond the support that her mum or dad can give her.
Okay, so a little bit more help from outside on that one. So we have one here from a parent of a 12-year-old who still sleeps beside her dad and won't have sleepovers. When she tries to have sleepovers, this is obviously with her friends as a social occasion, she has panic attacks. She just has to be beside her dad at night. Have you any advice?
So I guess it's about maybe talking with her as she now comes into her teenage years about just whether this is going to be something that gets in the way. It sounds like it is already getting in the way if a lot of her friends are naturally having sleepovers and these are things that, you know, she feels she just can't take part in, or that she can't even invite friends over if she wanted to host a sleepover. And I guess that might be the motivation really for her to maybe think about changing, because again, if it's the case that the mum and the dad are saying to her, look, you know, it's time for you to kind of grow up and maybe move into your own bed and get things sorted, you don't want to be sleeping beside your dad forever, and she's just not at that point where she's thinking, okay, it's not a big enough problem for me and I don't see any reason to change it and I like it and I feel safe and I feel secure, then I think it's about her recognizing that this is actually causing her problem, and that might be the start for her in terms of maybe taking on board that she might need to change. And if she needs to change, then how can she do that? And that would be then about supporting her to move into her own room, perhaps into her own bed with her dad, by the sounds of it, being there initially, doing a lot of the practical support, sitting beside the bed, keeping her company while she falls asleep, and then slowly, gradually over time, you know, moving, withdrawing himself from her room, but coming in to do checking visits and so on. That's the most effective and easiest route for older kids to have a parent who they're used to sleeping beside kind of move away from them.
Okay, probably difficult because a lot of time has passed, you know, that parent has probably felt that this was going to pass, and you get to the age of 12 and you start worrying then, and you've probably been worried for a number of years, but it's not too late to do something about it, is what you're saying.
No, never too late to do something about it. I mean, I think, you know, in truth, most kids, when they hit their teenage years, if they have had the habit of sleeping with a parent, will shift away from that just because of their own natural kind of instinctive drive to individuate and to separate and to become independent of parents. And so that will also impact them in terms of sleeping if they've, as I say, been used to sleeping with a parent. So, I mean, it is something that will probably naturally happen over the next couple of years anyway. But if they want to help her get to the point where, you know, she kind of preempts that a bit and starts the change sooner, I think it's about helping her spot how it is how it is causing her a problem. And that might be that it's causing her the social problem because she can't really get stuck into the sleepovers that she'd love to try.
David, we've so many questions coming in, and I'm trying to just find the one that I feel is most urgent, and we'll keep the others and we may come back to them the next time. But I just really want to get to this one, because this is from a parent who says, my little daughter who's 8 is being bullied at school by another girl of the same age. The school are trying their best, but it's the whispered nasty comments about her body or wishing her ill which is sapping her confidence. She's now crying every morning and doesn't want to go to school. The school has arranged that she can go to a room with an SNA until she calms down, but the other girl is now drawing attention to this and it's not helping. Is there anything we can do to build up her confidence? We're at our wits' end. And our daughter is not sleeping well either.
So I think, you know, that's not really about the 8-year-old who's being bullied. That's about the school maybe taking a completely different stance with the other 8-year-old girl who's doing all the sneaky whispering and the talking under her breath and so on. I think somebody needs to take her a little bit in hand and cause a bigger fuss with her and let her know about that her behavior is being witnessed, that it's spotted. Because if it is that sneaky, you know, the adults around need to pay greater attention so that they can spot that and then challenge her about that, because I think it's going to be really hard for the other 8-year-old to deal with it, because, you know, it's kind of like a leaky bucket. Much as the parents might fill her bucket in terms of building self-esteem and helping her feel good about herself, if this other girl is then, you know, stripping all that by the little comments that she's making, it's going to be really hard. So I think
of the bullied child, David, cannot do anything about how the school is dealing with the bully, can they? They can't influence that at all.
Sorry, Claire, I missed the start of that. The parents of the bullied child, well, it depends on how the school choose to address it, because if they wanted to go, they could go to the parent of the bullying child. Mm-hmm. But the parent of the bullied child, unless they know the other parents very well, if they do, then they could go and say, look, this is what's actually happening. Now, most parents react quite defensively when another parent comes to them and says, this is happening. But I think it's up to the school, perhaps, to address it with the parents of the girl who's doing the targeting, if they have enough evidence. And that's often the issue for schools, that if they don't feel that they have anything that they can, you know, clearly point to and say, these are the examples of the things that are happening. And so that might be, as I say, about, you know, somebody within the school lens, you know, trying to spot the little whispered comments. And even though, you know, nobody kind of likes the idea that, you know, kids are going to feel that they're telling tales, it is still really important that if schools foster this notion that we are a telling school, you know, we want people to tell us about when they feel uncomfortable or when people say things that feel mean, because that then frees up the little girl who is being targeted to actually come and say it to the teacher on a more regular basis. Because at the moment, you know, it is the case that they're kind of moving her away, giving her a bit of space and freedom, obviously, from this other girl. But that in itself is becoming problematic, as the mum has pointed out, because now she's being additionally targeted for being, in inverted commas, different in some way, that she's been brought out to the SNA.
Okay, so have a careful look at how the school is dealing with this and maybe make your...
Yeah,
your decision and your next move. Yeah, based on that.
Just keep talking with the school.
All right, David, we need to leave it there, but David will be back with us and we'll get to many more of those questions the next time we speak to David Coleman. We're going to get the view from Israel next as the country marks 1 year since the October 7th attacks.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.